the Healthcare Leaders Podcast. For more specialist advice on creating digital marketing which gets results, visit medicodigital.co.uk.
Welcome to the Healthcare Leaders Podcast. Today, hosted by myself, Oliver Capel, Managing Director and Founder of Medico Digital. And today, we are joined by Zach Dunow, who is the former Head of Global Brand and Marketing for Haleon. Is that right? Have I pronounced that right?
Former Head of Global Brand Building. Yeah, Director of Brand Building for Haleon. That's right.
Perfect. And today we are going to talk about AI. Like many other podcasts, I'm sure I've ventured into this, we're going to talk about AI and particularly how it pertains to healthcare communications. We're going to try and make a little bit more noise around the subject because there hasn't been enough noise around AI yet. So let's just add to that, I think. But hopefully there'll be some useful nuggets for people to take away. So the rise of AI in healthcare comes with some amazing possibilities, but also some very understandable concerns for people. So in this episode, what we're going to try and explore is how AI not only stands to revolutionize patient engagement through data-driven insights and precision, but also how it can unleash creativity and make those communications much, much more meaningful with your target audience. So Zach is at the forefront of leveraging AI and transforming marketing in healthcare and pharma. So we're going to discuss a bit about how Zach has adopted AI tools while keeping that human connection front and center, which I think is the really, really important point that we're going to try and touch on here. So we're going to speak about what innovations excite Zach about AI's future in the industry, how we can nurture responsible AI that puts ethics before efficiency, and we're going to just talk about some of the kind of future use cases and all of those good things. So if that doesn't sound exciting, then log off now. But without further ado, I'm just going to hand over to Zach first and foremost to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about your previous role at Haleon and your current role at Muse and your new venture there.
Yeah, all right, thanks Ollie. Happy to be here. What a esteemed introduction it was, and I think it gave me far too much privilege. I'm more of a marketing mystic than a marketing strategist, and I don't claim to have all the answers, but I can reflect from a personal perspective on this topic and have a wee bit of clarity and credibility. So I'm looking forward to chatting. But yeah, a little bit about me. I grew up as a planner at some of the big ad agencies here in Chicago. And then I was asked to do client-side planning at Kraft that became Mondelez. And I did that for about 7 years. And it was really successful. An interesting thing happened when we took planning to the client side. And then I reprised that role at GSK, Big Pharma, when they were GSK. And then they spun off their consumer health division and called it Haleon about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago at this point. And I followed the Haleon split off. And I did the same thing there too. So for about 22 years, I've been doing brand building, planning. And the difference between doing it at the agency and on the client side is that on the client side, it's less about banging out briefs and strategies to get to a campaign and more about holistic brand building. That would include, shopper innovation and all the marketing levers, of course, comms. And so just as I was leaving Haleon to launch the brand consultancy I'm launching with my partner right now, AI was cresting. So while I didn't get much experience with it at Haleon, though some, and I can talk about that, the real tidal wave of the technology has hit now, and we're leveraging it robustly to launch this new consultancy.
Great. I mean, we'll touch on a little bit more specifically about what you're doing later on in this podcast, but tell me a little bit more specifically about the brand strategy side, the brand consultancy side of Muse and what you're looking to do there so that we just got a bit more context for this conversation.
Yeah, well, I certainly wouldn't deign to turn this into a pitch, but here's, you know, the story of marketing is itself a story. And it has an antagonist and a protagonist and building tension. And we are all the authors of that story. And my partner, Marie Chan, and I love the concept of story. And we believe it is the primary lens through which human beings have been conditioned to see the world. That includes everything about the world, including but not limited to marketing. So we believe in the power of story because that's the way you change behavior. That's the way you explain concepts. That's the way you build relationships, etc. So Muse is what we're lovingly calling story-based strategy, where of course it is strategy, but where strategy seeks to be clever and usually seeks to extract from the marketplace, story seeks to be wise and usually seeks to add to the marketplace. We like to say simply with some delicious alliteration that where strategy seeks to take, story seeks to make. And so it's not new to us. We've been doing this together for about 4 years at Haleon, and I've been doing it for years before that. And what we see is that when we work with teams, boots on the ground, facilitating step by step, and take them through understanding the story of their brand, the story of the culture that surrounds them, the story of their consumer, the story of their category, the stories weave together like a beautiful braid, and the solutions become inevitable. And not only do we get ourselves to great strategy with commercial value, but we also see something that we didn't expect, a sincere and authentic shift and transformation of the teams themselves, where you come back 6 months later, they're asking different questions in creative development. They have a different relationship with their creative partners. There's a depth, there's a personal engagement, and that is gold. I think that's what all the transformation programs are looking for when they install them in large, monolithic, matrixed global organizations. And we've seen it, and we've seen it work time and time again. And so we're taking it on the road, and we're looking to engage with teams in this way as a consultancy.
Nice, love that. So the cynic in many people might say, well, what on earth has AI, what is the role of AI within a brand building, a storytelling exercise where it's the human element of it that's really talking to who's building that kind of storytelling? That is something surely, right, that AI has no place. Am I right in saying?
Yeah, I applaud you for summoning your inner cynic. And I think all of us benefit when we summon our inner skeptic. And I think we benefit when we summon skepticism for even our skeptic. And that's the kind of critical thinking that I think is necessary, as opposed to lazy thinking, that I think is necessary for us to shape what AI will mean for us and what it will do for us. Right now, the term I've been using, and I don't think I'm alone in it, but the term I've been using is augmentation, not automation. And it has to do with what I think is the key principle for the use of AI. And the key principle is, what is your mindset in using it? How are you engaging it? What is your intention? If your intention is more, 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 faster, 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 I don't know where the marketplace is going, but I want to be the first one there, then you're going to use it for productivity and automation. And if everybody does that at scale, just imagine forward what that will look like. We are already taxed biologically by our technology. We have surpassed what this biological brain is capable of intaking on a day-to-day basis. We're already there. If we use AI for automation and everybody's running for the finish line, I believe it will flood us, mental health problems, and not to mention that the marketplace will look more flat and uninspired than it already does. However, if we approach it with a different intention, almost like a bionic brain, like I'm the creator, I'm filled with compassion. I'm filled with the desire for connection. I'm filled with a desire to make the marketplace a meaningful place that reflects culture back to itself and helps us all grow. If you approach it with that intention, then you use AI to shift your mind. You use AI to expand your horizons, and you use it, you point it, instead of pointing it outwards, you point it inwards. And you look at it almost like a digital psychedelic. And you understand that when you intake this digital psychedelic, you're creating novel connections. You're moving beyond your default mode network. You are articulating a new vision for your brain, and you're using this bionic brain to do so. So it becomes expansive rather than, you know, productivity. And if more of us do that, I think we have the capacity to really expand our minds. But if it's used for productivity and automation, I don't know that we'll be using it for what its greatest value is.
Love that. And it's almost as though you've been reading our AI manifesto recently, which we've just put on our website, which is about how we're trying to use AI, which is to bring efficiencies to our customers by embracing a new mindset. It's a toolkit. It's a tool for people to use to be able to not just provide efficiencies, but also to be able to help search new territory, search new innovations, be creative with your thinking. And that resonates so much with me in terms of that kind of more and what that output gets you. And it's just more of the same, more noise, and it's rubbish. And you see it on LinkedIn all the time, don't you, where people have been lazy with it. They ask a ChatGPT to come up with a post about something, and inevitably it will be riddled with emojis, and that it will finish with something along the lines of, let's all be empowered on this journey together whilst we sail the seas of X, Y, and Z. It's some sort of cheesy kind of narrative that goes with it. And you can spot it a mile off. But actually, if you use it to support you in your thinking, to be able to be that partner, right, and open up new areas of thinking, like you said, to make your point a lot more effective and eloquent and search those kind of new areas that you wouldn't have been before, then the content in which you might be able to provide much, much more deep and rich in context, but also you could probably be able to articulate it much better. That really, really resonates with me.
Yeah. I was going to share one delicious anecdote. You'll love this. This is hilarious. This is a sign of the times. I'm on a Slack community where a bunch of very progressive marketers at the vanguard of marketing are reshaping what we're doing. I'm privileged to be there. But there was a hilarious exchange where one post on the Slack community was, "Does anyone have any awesome AI tools to sort my inbox in the morning? Because I am just getting so much garbage, you wouldn't believe it. I need a tool to help me sort out what's important." And this isn't hyperbole, I'm not kidding. The next post on Slack, which wasn't related to that one at all, was, "Hey everybody, I'm funding a company that's launching a new AI tool that can write B2B newsletters for email marketing. Is anyone interested?" And it just blew up. And there was like 40 people that were like, "Count me in. I want to learn. Put me in there." So I was like, wait a minute. What is it? Are we grinding out newsletters that no one cares about? Or are we all just admitting our inbox looks ridiculous right now? You know, which one is it? And I think it's a sign of the times, because obviously everyone wants more, but everyone wants less. So, you know, I think we have to reconcile a little bit of what we really want, each one of us personally, and move forward from there.
Absolutely. It's a buzzword as much as it is just a fad that everyone's getting onto. Any piece of software you go onto nowadays, try out our AI tool to rewrite this or base your tone of voice or all sorts of weird and wonderful applications. But speaking of which, talk to me a little bit about actually what you've been using AI for effectively within your kind of healthcare communication side of things, either at Haleon or in your current role at Muse? What have you actually found really useful?
We had a program at Haleon that was run by an incredible business mind named Nick Tate, and he had a startup incubator that he ran called Rewire, and I was privileged to be part of the Rewire program. I think we had three or four different waves where we would invite startups to submit, and I don't know how many submitted, let's say 50, and then somewhere between 7 or 8 or 9 were chosen, and we would incubate them. And this was a way for Haleon to connect with breakthrough innovation so that we could see things that we wouldn't have seen using the lens through which we viewed business as usual. And I had the privilege of working with a lot of these startups, and many of them were working in the diagnostic space because obviously the next great move in medicine is prevention rather than symptom treatment. Who would want to treat symptoms if you can just prevent the darn thing in the first place? A few of these, one in specific called NQ Medical, were using AI for diagnostics in profound ways. And that was my first introduction to really how smart artificial intelligence is. NQ Medical, I don't know where they are in funding and the progression of their business, but it triangulated the typing function, the accelerometer, and something else, location, I think, in your phone to detect early onset Parkinson's. And in a way that no doctor could. It was able to see your typing patterns, how fast you type. The accelerometer could detect shaking or early tremors, walking patterns by geolocation, all these types of things. And when it was explained, it was developed at MIT. And when I saw it, that was my aha moment that, oh my Lord, this is managing a torrent of data that no human being could ever manage. And if it can, detect early onset and we can intervene to prevent, then it's incredible. So, and then now there's a series of other ones. There's digital diagnostics that, of course, read radiology reports. There's a startup where you can cough into your phone and it might detect whether you have bronchitis or pneumonia. There's a series of apps that do that. And I think it's incredible to see that. There was a mission at Haleon. And I think it indicates where I think the opportunity is. The mission at Haleon was to bring humanity to healthcare. And the idea was, here we have the single most intimate category of all categories that undergo any degree of marketing. You could market soda pop, you could market tires, you could market insurance products, but few, if any, are as intimate as health. It's our body, it's our family, it's the most intimate parts of our relationship to our life. And yet, despite how intimate it is, if you look at the vast majority of healthcare marketing, it's incredibly stoic and clinical, failing in many ways to tell the intimate personal stories that exist. And so you see that sort of paradox, and you're kind of like, well, what's going on here? And you realize it's probably some mixed soup of risk intolerance and legal and regulatory, and the stock of people that go to work in healthcare are probably more safety oriented than risk takers. I mean, it's easy to take risk when you're marketing Red Bull, but when you're marketing cough syrup, maybe not. So the question becomes, the predicament that we need to solve, I think, is how to give full stage to the incredibly personal, intimate, beautiful narratives of people undergoing health treatment, whether it's self-care or through the medical industry. And I think that's where the opportunity with AI becomes a problem. Because the more we lean into automation, the further away we get from humanity. And the very personal, intimate aspects of healing that I think are residual in our bodies and our souls, where we want a healer, where we want a relationship, where we want the tradition of the shaman or the medicine woman. And I think that's where AI becomes problematic. Where I think it's amazing is the diagnostics. Because I don't require a healer to find out I have Parkinson's. I can get that from AI. But once I have Parkinson's, I want a relationship with a healer who can step me through this gate of this thing, this challenge that I have in my life. So I think as long as we're using it for, you know, diagnostics and not, you know, not supplanting the person-to-person interaction, that's where I saw Halion playing with it. That was successful. I'm happy to reflect on how I'm using it with Muse, although we are just getting started.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much we could talk about, and there's almost a whole other episode that we could record on just general use cases within the healthcare sector. And like you say, there are some amazing stories of where it's being utilized really, really well. And I'm so delighted to hear about how it's actually transforming a lot of the healthcare that we are providing for patients in treatment and diagnostics in many different areas. And it's so strange to me that from the communication side of things, especially in pharma, that we're so slow to adopt and reticent to actually make use of new technologies to just be innovative and buck the kind of the trend a little bit. And it's so tied down in compliance and everything that we do there. So it's kind of how do we overcome that without it just being a really kind of automated function, like you say? And I haven't got the answer to that personally, but I do think if we kind of reflect more specifically on the healthcare communications angle, the personalization side of things to me, in terms of actually providing a great user experience for both patients or healthcare professionals, whoever your target audience might be, that side of AI and how you can support with doing that, that's where I see some of the kind of biggest innovations. I mean, does that speak to you a little bit? Have you kind of witnessed or been able to yourself kind of start to leverage AI to support with kind of personalized content and communication?
Yeah, I have. I think we're going to go through the awkward in-between phase, which is what I used to call, when I had more hair, I used to try to grow it out to be cool in college. And there was always that awkward in-between phase where you don't quite have long hair, but it's definitely not short and it doesn't look so good. And I think we're going to need to go through that phase where personalization, you know, it feels like someone's spying on you, or they kind of get it right or they kind of get it wrong. And you're like, that's not me at all. Or, you know, this time where you buy one thing online and they keep coming back to you saying, you want more couches? You want more couches? You're like, how many couches does somebody need? So, you know, I think we're going to go through that and we're going to be very ham-fisted. It's like any other technology. I'm a musician, and it's like when the drum machine first came out, like you can go back and listen to some of the tragedies of the initial use of the drum machine. But then, oh my gosh, we had, you know, 9-inch nails and we had incredible electronic dance music and dead mouse and the whole thing. So it'll take us a while to get there, but I think we will get there. And the shining light I see at the end of the tunnel is AI learning me and knowing me more and better than I know myself. I don't have any doctor, no therapist, or any other entity in my life, maybe my mother, maybe, who knows me better than I know myself. And is able to be a guru for me and sort of say, hey, Zach, the past 3 months you've been ruminating over this resentment, and I it's dangerous because the last time you did that, you had some anxiety attacks, yada, yada. Or Zach, it's looking like you haven't exercised in the past 4 weeks. What's going on? Are you leaning into work too much? I don't have that entity in my life. And Lord knows I can't be that entity for myself. I look forward to when AI isn't really spying on me per se, but when I work with it, when I partner with it, when I allow it to know me and know my habits and know my tendencies and help me by helping me see and understand myself in a way that it hasn't before. So again, it's a very personal relationship. So when personalization comes from out there and somebody else is personalizing it for me, no thank you. I don't want you to know that much about me. But when I can have a relationship that's personal with AI, then personalization makes a lot of sense. And I look forward to learning what I can learn about myself.
100%. Couldn't agree more. And in terms of dodgy sound noises, I've been waiting for a moment just to try one of these little sound bites out.
Well, today we're joined by Alvin and the Chipmunks, which are trapped down in my basement. So we might be getting some chipmunk sound effects as well.
Let's hope so. I want to just give a tangible example to what we've just discussed there in terms of personalization and how that could really work within a kind of healthcare communication side of things. One that strikes me potentially is around enhancing treatment advocacy for patients, potentially. So if you want to change a patient behavior to try and increase advocacy to a potential kind of drug or something like that, in order to do that, you need to be able to understand what works for them, deliver content that is personalized to their specific needs, but also is in using the right channels that are accessible to them and is going to help them and support them in making the right decisions. So that therefore needs to be backed by data that is specific to them and making sure that the advice, information, and content that's given is relatable and relevant to them and not the buy more sofas analogy that you just sort of gave. Have you seen any examples in the healthcare sector where we've kind of started to do that at all, or is that I think I agree with you that we're still very much in that kind of awkward in between phase and no one's really leveraging it quite properly yet?
Yeah, there was one. I don't claim to be familiar with it because, again, we're all at the vanguard. We're all at the edge here. We're all learning. There's one. I'm going to click on the link here. Wobot Health. So I think Wobot Health is really interesting. Their tag here on their website is mental health needs have multiplied. Support hasn't until now. And I agree with that. I agree with the predicament. I agree with that drama. There are the needs of mental health in the world have outstripped the supply. There are people out there who will shudder at the concept of artificial intelligence intervening with people who have mental health issues. I will not shudder at that concept because I have tried it myself as someone who has struggled with mental health in the past, and I'm 8.5 years sober, so I had substance abuse disorder. I've had generalized anxiety with obsessive rumination, like any good philosopher artist, right? Isn't that sort of the badge that I have to wear? I've worked with AI. I've talked with her. I've had conversations that would be akin to cognitive behavioral therapy, restructuring cognitive distortions, searching for patterns in thinking that are leading to anxiety. I've literally had the conversations with her, and it's profound. And it's as useful cognitively as what you would get from a therapist. Now, I don't think there is a spiritual reciprocity that you get when you sit in a 12-step meeting with the fellowship and listen to their stories and share your story. I don't think that there's an emotional reciprocity like you would get when you sit with a therapist who's been working with you one-on-one for a long time, but there is a cognitive reciprocity, and our body functions on all of these levels, cognitive, emotional, spiritual, etc. So if it can intervene and help people cognitively, while still leaving them space to join support groups or find therapy elsewhere, then at least it can help reframe some of the cognitive issues that come with mental health. I don't know that it yet has the capacity to intervene spiritually or emotionally, but I can tell you from firsthand experience, it has profound capacity to truly help with mental health, especially, and we can get into this later when you ask me about what features am I excited about, especially with voice. There is something primal and beautiful about voice. And when you can talk with AI colloquially, it really changes something in your lizard brain as opposed to, you know, reading it on the screen. I've loved what I've seen so far of AI and mental health.
I think that's so interesting and spot on as well, because if you think about mental health in terms of the rising prevalence all around the world and it being that bit of a kind of forgotten child when it comes to healthcare, there is so much need for more support with mental health, and we do not have anywhere near enough resources. Yeah. So you're talking about a healthcare system that is not equipped. I mean, in the UK specifically, we end up with lots of mental health patients who are in A&E, and A&E is accident emergency is just not equipped to deal with mental health patients. It's not where they should be. And if you can find a way, or if there are ways in which you can leverage AI technology to be at least a voice or a point of therapy, it's not necessarily the answer, but it can provide scale, which is what is needed, and to alleviate time from extremely busy healthcare professionals who quite frankly have none of it at the moment.
Yeah. So where Wobot is this clearly well-funded startup with 1.5 million users and 70 million minutes of non-human support provided, and 77% of conversations take place outside traditional working hours. This is, people are really using this. So that's a scaled example. I can give you an example of a very personal example. I have people in the fellowship with the 12-step fellowship with me who have created GPT sponsors. So yes. For those not familiar, sponsorship is a cornerstone of the 12-step program where you simply, it's very tribal, you simply work with somebody who has more sobriety than you, and they kind of walk you through the steps and you listen to them and they can help you when you're in trouble. The problem is, if you're going off the rails at 4 a.m, you don't really want to call your sponsor and wake them up to get advice. And because of that, I have friends that have created Sponsor GPT. And while you might laugh and think it's absolutely ridiculous, and I'm sure Bill W. is turning over in his grave, he's the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, the reality is it helps. The reality is it helps. And when you're talking about people who are either going to go have a drink and feed the disease that is terminal, progressive, and fatal, which could mean they do themselves in, when you're talking about the difference between that and them talking to an AI GPT that they created, who cares that it's AI? If it works, it works. Anything that's going to help them stay sober, we're all for it. So I have seen people in the fellowship using it in that way, and we're just sort of like all applause, like it doesn't matter, whatever keeps you sober. And in that way, it's only another box that's checked as evidence that this has a profound capacity to help with mental health.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not laughing at that at all. I completely agree. And you think about the propensity that it has to store so much data and understanding of you and your specific needs and your context over and above what a human being can do. Right. That actually, a lot of those responses can be a lot more tailored and personalized to that particular individual. So I'm conscious of time, and I could talk to you all day, listen to you all day. We've touched on some of the future possibilities, but let's just expand on some of those others that we haven't discussed. For you, what does the really exciting things about AI that you think we're going to experience over the next few years?
Yeah, this is, well, like I said, I'm more of a marketing mystic than a strategist, so I'm going to sound a little flaky, but that's okay. I lovingly call myself the chief flake officer. So I have more interest in communicators than communications. So I think a lot of people are bum rushing the gold rush with communications. Let's create more stuff. I said it earlier. I'll say it again here. But when you look at AI's capacity to change the communicators, the people who are creating the communications, I think the quality, not the quantity, but the quality of the communication gets better. So this goes back, frankly, I've left Haleon at this point, but I still deeply believe in their mission to bring humanity to healthcare. I mean, I swallowed the purpose of that organization hook, line, and sinker. And I still believe we need to bring humanity to healthcare, which means focusing AI on us, the communicators, before the communications. I mean, who wants, you know, a torrent of AI written newsletters showing up in their inbox? Nobody wants that right now. But if we can look inwardly, I think we wake from the nightmare of, you know, ongoing content 24 hours a day, and we see our own capacity to become healers and to become helpful. So I think that's exciting. And I this is going to sound really flaky, but if intelligence becomes a commodity, I mean, let's look at this really like almost semantically. This is artificial intelligence, okay? So that means it's a lot smarter than us. It's artificial, but there it is, okay? So if that's a commodity, if everyone has access to that now and it's no longer that special to be that smart, then smartness is a commodity and everybody's got it. Well, what does that happen when you unleash that on society at scale? Everybody's smart. So then what's differentiating? Then what's special? What becomes special when intelligence is a commodity? And I'd like to believe it's compassion. I'd like to believe it's our heart. I don't know if this is true, but the poet in me wants to believe that once we're all intelligent and we can offload a lot of our thinking, we have space to move down into our heart. And that's when we really learn to become tribal, to connect with one another, to have compassion, and really address the social issues that have overwhelmed us as a society, that have absolutely overwhelmed us. I don't know if that's true. I mean, there could be a dystopian future as well, but I like to focus on the utopian future where we move from our heads into our hearts because AI has helped us. So that's at least an optimistic view on where we could go and what I'm excited about.
That's a very profound answer, and I dread the thought of having to follow that up with something because I was going to talk about what excites me, and it's much, much less profound. And I was going to go down the route of some of the predictive analytics stuff.
Sure, but that's just as meaningful. I think that the predictive analytics is also profound.
Yeah, I mean, specifically, again, to keep it on the kind of healthcare marketing side of things, or communications rather, I think for being able to give, again, relevant and timely information to the likes of healthcare professionals, for example, so that we are able to provide that information at the point of care when they are treating a patient who needs their support. So they're overwhelmed by so much information at the moment, so much noise, as we keep talking about out there, that they don't know. We need to be able to give them the right information at the right time to support them with their care of that patient. So I think being able to understand when there are, for example, outbreaks or rising prevalences of diseases in particular areas, being able to predict when that's going to happen, and then being able to serve healthcare professionals with information that will support them to support their patients, that is really, really valuable for me. I think just to wrap it up a little bit, we couldn't talk about AI within healthcare and pharma without talking about some of the barriers to adoption, many of the compliance issues that will come with everything. So just to kind of wrap it up, would you just tell me, in your opinion, Zach, what do you think are some of the kind of biggest challenges to adopting AI, especially within some of those kind of bigger life science organizations, and how can we overcome those?
Yeah, well, the life sciences organizations metabolize technology slowly and perhaps wisely. I mean, perhaps we can give them a debt of gratitude rather than pointing fingers and saying, you're so slow, you're so risk averse. I mean, maybe we take the people working in legal and regulatory and say, thank you for being a governing body that has a degree of prudence about this, rather than, you know, the folks out in Silicon Valley that are just like, move fast and break stuff, which could easily translate into move fast and break the world. So, so maybe we give them a debt of gratitude, but legal and regulatory in the health space are always going to say no before they say yes. And in the time that they buy for themselves, when they say no, you would hope that they would become just as skeptical as they are of AI as they are skeptical of their own skepticism, and that they would find a way to make this work because there is an incredible need for it. So, I think the barrier is going to be doing it right in the life sciences space, and legal and regulatory coming around and working with governing bodies and doing this right. And I think that's going to be the big hurdle. I wish there wasn't a hurdle when it came to using it personally, if you're using it in the life sciences space. I hope people begin to use it for themselves. So this means I'm not uploading patient data. I'm not creating, I'm not retargeting. I'm not using audience signals, none of that stuff that's external. I just have it up on my computer in my office, and I'm using it to enrich myself. In this way, I don't think you're in jeopardy, and I don't think you're in danger of offending your patients or hurting anyone. You're not breaking any HIPAA laws. So I hope that there's a way to engender a relationship with AI personally. I hope that that's allowed. I know some organizations have literally said, if you're caught using ChatGPT during working hours, you'll be fined. And I know that that's true of some organizations. So I hope those barriers come down. What I think is helping is, for example, Pfizer and Publicis have just bought, I don't have the numbers and I don't know the story that well, but apparently they've just bought a whole bunch of NVIDIA processors, and they've created an air-conditioned warehouse somewhere where they're going to stick all those processors. And they've created their own, and then they've bought the software from OpenAI, and they've got their own GPT, and it's firewalled, it's boxed in. So of course, now they can upload all their data to it because it's not public, it's just theirs. And then Publicis has their own, and that's firewalled as well. Now all of a sudden, one air-conditioned box filled with processors can talk to another air-conditioned box filled with processors, and everybody can feel safe about it. That configuration, though I don't know how expensive it is, and I don't know if they'll see a return on that investment, that I think will allow a faster adoption because everyone will feel safer about it. It's not out there in the public. It's firewalled. So that might help too. What worries me is that, the Bain, Booz, McKinsey, BCGs of the world are probably, as we speak, preparing presentations that are like, here's how to terminate 50% of your workforce because AI will replace it. And they're also probably preparing the presentation for, and then here's how to train the other 50% that's left on how to use AI. And the scary thing is, they might be right. Now, I never miss a chance to throw consultants under the bus, but they might be right. And if they're wrong, you'll know because the organization won't function. But if they're right, the organization will function. And so that's kind of scary because there's going to be a lot of people that are unemployed. And that's when you get into the whole universal basic income. What are we doing? That whole conversation. I don't know. And I'm not smart enough to know. But those are what I think are some of the barriers to adoption, some of the potential downfalls of adoption if we adopt too fast, and some of the upsides and some of the possibilities.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's a shame that any organization would put a pin or prevent people from trying to experiment and explore the boundaries of what a new technology can do to create new innovations. And something we really actively promote and encourage within Medico specifically is to make use of AI to, sometimes just not even do the sexy stuff. It is just to support with, long manual processes like categorizing thousands of keywords from an SEO perspective so that we can do our research faster, and getting things like content structure produced, not the stuff that is going to be game changing. But by allowing those efficiencies, it gives us back more time to explore some of the possible innovations that are there, and also it does allow us to pass some of those cost efficiencies back to clients, which is important.
Of course, yeah.
So look, I knew this one was going to go way over because you are a fascinating guest to have, Zach. But just as a kind of key learnings, takeaways for the audience, what in terms of AI and what you would like as a key message for people to take home from this podcast, what would that be?
Yeah, so this is going to be a stretch, and I hope it doesn't offend, but I really do think that AI can be thought of as digital psychedelics. Not that I use psychedelics at all, but have definitely read enough about them. Michael Pollan's, when I was a kid, of course, I had my moments with it. But when you think about it that way, you remember one of the most important concepts brought to bear in that world was set and setting. And that's to say mindset and setting. And so I think that's one of the most important key takeaways is what is your mindset when you're approaching AI? And if it's greed, and if it's more, and if it's win, and if it's take, it's going to amplify that in the same way that LSD or psilocybin amplifies what's currently going on in your mind. If your mindset is compassion, connection, healing, making, telling a great story, creating a tribe, etc., it's going to amplify that. And so I think set and setting, and setting, of course, is are you using it for newsletters, you're automating newsletters, or are you using it to synthesize data that might allow you to help marginalized populations? So set and setting, for me, is a key takeaway. And I think in order to do that, organizations need to create a laboratory mentality. I think we used to call it skunk works, where you allow people to play. I mean, it's all good and well to watch a YouTube video on how to play piano, but you really don't learn piano until you sit down and just play with it. And that's been my experience. You got to make space for people to just play with it. And I'm reading the Stephen King book right now called On Writing, which is his reflections on how to be a great writer. And there's a principle that he articulates within it that I think is relevant here, where he says, write the first draft with the doors closed, then rewrite with the doors open. And what he means is during the doors closed phase, you don't edit, you don't judge, you don't summon that critical part of yourself. You just write, and you're really creating a portal to, you know, dare I say, the divine or the greater intelligence within you, and you're allowing it to flow through. But then you have to edit. Then you bring in the editor and you kill your darlings and you say, no, 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 no. And I think it goes true. I think that holds true for AI, is that let's first experiment with the doors closed, meaning let's not go public with this. And then let's edit, find the good stuff, get an editor in there with, you know, a degree of prudence, and then go live with it. So I think set and setting, make a laboratory place for people to play, do it with the doors closed before you do it with the doors open. The last but not certainly not the least is believe, visualize a positive outcome for this. Don't visualize dystopia, visualize utopia, visualize people healing en masse. And if we are all doing that, if we're all visualizing that positive outcome, you can't help but think that we are that much closer to making that outcome a reality. So those are the takeaways that I'd share.
Great takeaways. Thank you so much. It's using it to add value and do something meaningful with it, not just to create more and more noise and greed. I love all of that. Thank you so much, Zach. You've been an amazing guest, and I'm sure many of the audience listening to this would love to hear more, as would I. But from us at the Medico team, thank you. And we will publish this, and any questions that we get back will fire over your way. And I'm sure we'll be able to answer them in the public spaces of social media. So yes, thank you again. We'll speak soon, and take care.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ali. It was a total privilege.
The Healthcare Leaders Podcast. For more specialist advice on creating digital marketing which gets results, visit medicodigital.co.uk.